Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889. From our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. In a few short weeks, on Monday, May the 7th, the glitterati of the culinary world will gather in Chicago to learn who will be named a coveted James Beard Award winner this year. Our Louisiana talent will be showing up in force for sure, as this year, once again, there's lots of local luminaries nominated. On this week's show, we'll talk with some of last year's winners, Rebecca Wilcom of Herb Saint, named 2017's Best Chef of the South, and Zach Engel, who was crowned with the Rising Star title for his work at Shia. We'll hear how Zach's coped with that success while leaving behind the restaurant where he won the award, and what's next in the Rising Star's future. Chefs Steven Strajewski, Ryan Pruitt, and homegrown John Currents share their memories of past James Beard wins. One thing's for certain, win or lose, May 7th will be a night to remember. But right now, it's all James Beard winners, all the time, on this week's Louisiana Eats.
My name is Zachary Engel, and I won the 2017 James Beard Foundation's Rising Star Chef of the Year Award.
Growing up on the mean streets of Philadelphia, last year's James Beard Rising Star Chef, Zach Engel, always longed to be a businessman. However, his trek to New Orleans to attend business school at Tulane reignited an old passion, cooking. This proverbial fork in the road led Zach into the kitchen, where he eventually ended up at award-winning Israeli restaurant, Shia. We spoke with Zach about his journey to the James Beards and the ups and downs along the way. Zach, first of all, congratulations again on that amazing accomplishment.
Thank you.
When I thought about having this conversation, I was making myself laugh, thinking of you sort of like Miss America, getting ready to give up your crown. Do you feel that way at all?
The thought has definitely crossed my mind. It's a pretty weird sensation, but, you know, once you win a James Beard Award, you've always won a James Beard Award. It kind of applies, but almost doesn't. But, you know, it's interesting. It's great to see, like, a new class of people under 30 that are really, like, pushing the boundaries and, like, excelling in their craft. And, like, I'm just excited for anyone that's on there. It's awesome stuff.
Even just getting nominated is an honor. It really is like the food Oscars.
It is. I mean, getting on that, what everyone calls the long list, is incredible. You can see you're just aligned with all these people that you might have been following on social media or their restaurants for, like, years. And then you're right up there with them. And then when I made the short list for the finalist, you know, it was the day that my daughter, like 7 days after she was born, it was her baby naming. And I was like, I'm on the same list as, you know, these guys from Chicago and New York and Seattle and Philly that are, like, incredibly talented. How do I belong on here? And, like, with all the hard work we did at Shia, that was enough for me.
Tell me about your special night. How did that roll out?
You know, I was just there with my wife, my parents. My mother-in-law was in town watching the baby, and Alon and Emily Shia, Sean Courtney, our general manager, were all sitting in the row, and they're all like, yeah, you're going to get it, you're going to get it. And I'm just kind of like, this is just cool to be here. When do I get to wear a tux? My wife looks gorgeous. This is great. And then I hear that, you know, when they announce my name, I hear the start of Zach, and I'm just like, what is going on? It was unbelievable. I had to have a speech prepared because I knew that if by the long shot I would win, I would need to be able to get my thoughts together a little bit because I'd just be dumbfounded, which I was.
What did you say?
thank the staff at Shia for all their hard work, Alon for being a great mentor, Sean, who's kind of been my partner for 3 years now, and as we like move forward with Pomegranate Hospitality, you know, he's the operations side, I'm the culinary side, and like we work so well together. And then mostly my wife, because we've been together since I was like a line cook in Philadelphia. So she's been around for this, people would call it a meteoric rise, but to me it just seems a little bit like a fantasy world.
Well, it has really been quite a year. You're barely one quarter into having assumed this mantle of best new chef, rising chef in America, and all of a sudden, Alon Shia has been fired. Was that a surprise?
Yeah.
What did you? You might. I mean, talk about confusion as a young chef. What did you think?
Yeah, I think it's just like it was tough because like it had always been this vision of like we were gonna like do so much more together, and then all of a sudden that plan like forked in the road and it went a different direction than I thought, and like I'm a meticulous planner, I'm very organized, so I had this like 10-year plan down the road that suddenly wasn't there. And that gave me a lot of anxiety, like to not know what was next, to not know what is next. Because every day I could go in and do my job, right? And for the 6 weeks that I was there after he was fired, I was doing my job.
You're right in the midst of all this negative turmoil. How did that play out for you?
So the first few months were intense. A lot of distraughtness emotionally of like what to do. For me, I almost felt ostracized by the entire city. And I think that was in my head, you know, it was like everyone thinks a certain way about you or who you're associated with or whatever. And that's tough because I'm the kind of person that doesn't really like to feel like people have a negative perception of me. When Alon had gotten kind of a little bit more organized and put together with everything with Pomegranate. And he was like, look, you can come on board and we can continue to do what we were doing. And, you know, I was able to like not change my lifestyle at home, really, like make drastic changes like that and like join a startup. I kind of thought relieved, of course, and also that it was great to be able to move forward, move past that sort of like thing that's always holding you back. I learned after that period of time where it was like a little bit rough on me to not worry about all that other stuff, you know? And because it just, when you focus on the negativity and you focus on the negative perceptions, for me, it was getting too much in my head, I think like 60 miles an hour. And I was getting, you know, negative in my life. And I'm not at a point where I feel like I should be like a grumpy old man all the time. So I kind of like discarded all that negative baggage and I don't worry about it anymore. Like I don't worry about any of the stuff that doesn't have to do with moving two restaurants forward and creating a strong message for how good the food that we cook can be.
What was your biggest takeaway? What did you learn in this last year through everything you've been through?
I've learned a great deal, and this is kind of something that I've thought about throughout my career, is you learn actually more, especially in cooking, from mistakes than you do from successes. Some of the success of Shia was that we made mistakes early and we corrected them quickly. I learned a lot more about operations. I learned a lot more about the kind of deals that like chefs get. And that's not just from my own personal experiences, but from like a lot of press that's been written about that kind of stuff lately. I've also learned a lot about the impact of like one action on a community. Like nothing is the same anymore in the restaurant industry because of a few actions by a few people. And I'll never make those mistakes. I'll never treat anyone less than human, acknowledge the efforts of every person in like our community that either works for us or we work with or we serve. I think that like the mistakes that people make that come out in the press, like every cook, every server, every person that works in the hospitality industry should be reading and learning about it and making a judgment on like, okay, well, if I were in that situation, what's the point where I would have avoided that from turning negative? And that's kind of how I evaluate all of it, is like, I don't dwell on it, but I do know like, cool, well, I'll never do that. Whatever that mistake is somebody made, big or small, that's the biggest thing, learning from that.
Tell me how you see your place in this new team that Elan has put together at Pomegranate Hospitality.
So I see myself balancing two restaurants, almost like an executive chef, but not doing as much of the day-to-day. It's going to be a different eating experience than before, with some of the same stuff, some new stuff that like no one's seen or thought about before.
And what's the name of the restaurant?
The name of the restaurant in New Orleans is Saba, which means grandfather in Hebrew. And the name of the restaurant in Denver is Safta, which means grandmother, which is a great combination. It kind of brings to the like to light that like this is food that's cooked ancestrally. I'm looking forward to getting past sort of the buzz about an award and like get back to cooking and making people happy and showing people that like the award's great, and I'm very appreciative for like my colleagues in the Beard Foundation for awarding it to me, but I have to live up to that now and make sure that like I honor the tradition of all the people that have come before me. And that's kind of like, I'm fired up for that.
Well, Zach, I'm fired up too. Congratulations. I'm so excited to have a front row seat on what comes next. And please come back and talk with us anytime on Louisiana Eats. You're always welcome.
Thank you very much, Poppy, for having me.
Zach Engel, the 2017 James Beard Rising Chef of the Year. To hear more about last year's fallout at Shia, as well as what's on the horizon for Zach and Elan at the new restaurants, Saba and Safta, visit poppytooker.com, where you'll find a Louisiana Eats Quick Bite podcast with Elan Shia himself. Coming up next, we speak with the 2017 Best Chef of the South, Herb Saint's Rebecca Wilcom. Louisiana Eats returns in a moment. Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Rouse's Markets, from Camellia Brand, Beans Done Right, a New Orleans tradition since 1923, and Brennan's Restaurant. Breakfast at Brennan's, featuring Chef Slade Rushing's updated classic Creole cuisine. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, and private events at 417 Royal Street in the historic French Quarter. Are you podcasting Louisiana Eats yet? If not, it's time to subscribe. We've launched a podcast series, Louisiana Eats Quick Bites. On our newest podcast, we go into the kitchen at Maypop to learn how to make soup dumpling dim sum with Chef Michael Galata. You don't want to miss this. So subscribe today on our podcast page at poppytooker.com. That way, you won't miss a single serving of our broadcast or our Quick Bites podcasts. And now, back to Louisiana Eats.
I'm Rebecca Wilcombe. I'm the executive chef at Herb St. Barn Restaurant and the 2017 Best Chef South James Beard Award winner.
Chef Rebecca Wilcombe speaks softly, but carries a big whisk. Humble but determined, she's quietly risen through the ranks at Donald Link's original restaurant, Herb St. The 2017 James Beard Awards catapulted Rebecca into the limelight when she took home the award for Best Chef of the South. As it turns out, the person most shocked by the award was Rebecca herself.
It was really unexpected. I didn't expect to be nominated or even made the finals list, or let alone to win. It was one of the last awards that they gave that night, so I was really nervous throughout the whole thing. And then, you know, that moment came, and my name was called, and, you know, I stumbled up to the front and climbed over some people because I went down the wrong row and got on stage, and it was really awkward. I gave, you know, David Chang a hug. Like, I don't, he doesn't know me. I don't know him, you know, but gave him a hug because I thought that's what you do. yeah, and just made it, you know, short, sweet speech and went back and had some champagne. So, I mean, it was such a great experience and such an honor and such, I mean, it was a whirlwind, but I savored every moment of it. You know, I mean, it was great.
Where are you from?
I moved down from Boston. Spent junior high and high school in Massachusetts. My father was in the military, so we moved around a bit when I was growing up.
And what did you do once you got here?
Well, I knew that I wanted to work for Donald. I had read some interview with him, and he was talking about music. I'm like, man, this guy's cool. You know, so I moved down, immediately, you know, had a stack of resumes, and I was headed to Koshan to drop one off because I really wanted to work at Koshan. But I happened to drive by Herb St. first, and, you know, walked in the door, and just so happened to be wine tasting day, and Donald and Steven, a bunch of people were at the bar, so I just walked up to them and handed them my resume.
What did you start off doing at Herb St.? What was your first job?
My first job was AM Saute, so that was a production-heavy station. So my first job at Herb St. was making dirty rice and making gumbo and okra and tasso gravy and shrimp bisque. And so, I mean, I thought I was really lucky. I'm like, man, you know, I just, Massachusetts girl moving down, you know, first job, I get to make gumbo every day. I mean, it's crazy. Why are they trusting me to do that?
It's the stuff dreams are made of. You know?
Really, yeah.
How long did it take you to become the chef de cuisine?
Let's see. I moved here in 2008. I became chef de cuisine in 2011.
And how does it work at Herb St. to be the chef de cuisine and work with Donald in that position?
I mean, it was a mentorship, you know. And what we do is we talk a lot about food and we talk about dishes, and I experiment with those dishes and try things out and we taste things, you know. And then eventually we start traveling together. And so, you know, Donald and I have traveled all over together, and it's a creative process that has become really organic and natural. And he's been through it all too. So he also helps me work through, you know, my own insecurities and how I define myself as a chef. And, you know, it's a creative relationship that happens on many levels.
Have you had any drastic failures?
Oh, yeah, I fail all the time. Those dishes don't make it on the menu, or don't even, they make it to staff meal, you know? Oh yeah. You can't, if you don't have any failures, you're not trying hard enough, right?
As a woman managing a kitchen, what's been going on in your mind the whole time that these male dominated workspaces have been sort of blowing up because of bad behavior?
Well, I think that, you know, overall, I have a very firm moral compass, you know, so things are right and things are wrong. There's no other way to me, you know. So, you know, in the kitchen, I've always been aggressive, but I have been, you know, my entire life. I was kind of born this way. I feel like I didn't have to change the way that I am to fit into a kitchen. I found that environment and I was like, wow, man, like this is where I'm supposed to be, you know, and I can be myself in this place. Awesome, you know, and always try to do the right thing. I try to push people and motivate people every day, regardless of, you know, their sex or anything else. I never really saw myself as, you know, a woman in the kitchen. I'm like, yeah, I'm part of a team. I'm a line cook, you know, but I also made good choices. I didn't work in places like that. If I saw any inkling of anything that I didn't agree with, I didn't work there. Every time I felt like I was, you know, treated differently because I'm a woman, I just kept going and proved them wrong.
What's your favorite part of being a chef?
Being a part of something? I would say the unexpected thing about Herb Saint when I first started was I couldn't believe how many people I got to know who dine there. I mean, we have so many regulars, and building relationships with them and knowing some of these people for almost 10 years. I mean, it's, you know, bonus to going in and actually having the same people come in all the time is unbelievable. It's very special.
What are your goals and aspirations now?
I'd say, you know, they're to keep learning, traveling. I feel like, you know, as a chef, the more I learn, the more I feel like I don't know anything.
The life of a chef or anyone working in a restaurant is so demanding. It's not like you have a lot of flex time. So I imagine there's lots of places in the world that are beckoning to you.
Yeah, and they all have to do with food. You know, it's the food calling me to places. You know, do I want to see Machu Picchu? Yes. But what interests me more is going and having, you know, the food in Peru. I just spent almost a month in Italy, which was great. My mom is from Italy, but she's from the Veneto. I went to Rome, and it's the first time I'd been to Rome since I was, you know, a baby. And I was in Rome for 5 days. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go eat here, and I'm going to eat there, and I'm going to get pizza here and go to this market and do all these things. And then I thought, well, what am I going to do in between? I'm like, the thought never even occurred to me that I'm in Rome. I'm going to go to the Vatican. I'm going to go to the Colosseum. And I did all of those things, but it was an afterthought almost. I hate to say that because it's so incredible, but it was. I was there for the food, for the restaurants, and for the wine, and, you know.
Well, Rebecca, this has been such a treat to have this opportunity to talk with you.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Rebecca Wilcom, chef de cuisine at Herb Saint and the 2017 James Beard Best Chef of the South. Was a big year for Ryan Pruitt, chef and co-owner of Pesh Seafood Grill, which he operates with partners Donald Link and Steven Strajewski. When the James Beard nominations were announced that spring, the young chef discovered he was up for an award in two categories, Best Chef of the South and, with Donald and Steven, Best New Restaurant in America. The city of New Orleans kept Pesh's sidewalks torn up for the entire first year, forcing customers to literally walk the plank to be able to dine there. Despite the hazard, obviously the James Beard judges discovered that the dynamic trio of Link, Strajewski, and Pruitt had set out to do with fish what they had previously done with pig at Cochon. Speaking to us in the Pesh kitchen, Ryan explained their goal of advancing seafood from the Gulf.
We had been talking about opening a seafood restaurant for years, and, you know, we were kind of wrestling with what direction the restaurant was going to go. You know, where it all kind of came together is we sort of all fell in love with these cooking techniques. We wanted to open a seafood restaurant, and we just sort of merged the two. It was really a pretty easy merger. You know, the ideas of cooking seafood over fire, I mean, grilled fish tastes great. You know, shrimp on a grill tastes great. And all these things, you know, these are sort of proven concepts. Where it really came together for us is that we wanted it to all happen over an actual wood fire device. Kind of move away from the gas grills and those sort of more controlled cooking elements and have something that has more life to it, that has more energy. And the way that it sort of blossomed and to give us this whole realm of things that we can do with the grill and the ways that we can steer seafood in sort of interesting ways, interesting but not unfamiliar ways, you know, has been really rewarding.
In May 2014, when Ryan arrived in New York City for the James Beard Awards Gala, he'd never been nominated for a Beard Award, let alone two at one time. He described how it felt to be sitting in the audience as a nominee, a distinction that comes by being judged the very best by a jury of your peers.
It's a little overwhelming. I mean, you know, at first you kind of walk in and you're surrounded by every single person whose cookbook you've ever read or restaurant you've ever been to or person you've admired or read about. And all these people are kind of first and foremost and right in front of you. A few drinks later, you just settle into the moment, I think.
Before the 2014 James Beard Awards, partners Donald Link and Steven Strzajewski already claimed three awards between the two of them. Apparently, multiple wins begins to give you a hunger for more. When it first opened, their restaurant, Koshan, was nominated for Best New Restaurant in America, but didn't win. Now, Pesh was in the running for that same award. Here's Steven.
When we opened Koshan, the goal wasn't to get nominated for Best New Restaurant. But then when that happened, it kind of changed things. Just realizing that that was an opportunity really kind of made it something that was then suddenly on the radar. When we opened this place, like, it was something that we actually kind of thought about more because Donald had two awards, I had an award, and the idea was a lot more easy to grasp. Like, it seemed like something conceptually that we could do.
By the end of the ceremony, Pesh became the first ever New Orleans restaurant to take home the Best New Restaurant in America award. When it came time to announce the winner of Best Chef of the South, Ryan was in an anxious state of suspense.
You sort of spend the whole night waiting and sitting there repeatedly and continuously tapping my foot and grabbing both my wife and Tommy, our GM here's shoulders in nervousness and rubbing the all of the paint off of a toy car that my kid had given me. Until the moment when the award, you know, the announcement comes up, and then, you know, everything kind of stops, and when they call your name, I think the whole scene shifts a bit because you have to switch into the mode where you're going to go on stage and actually speak in front of a, you know, large room of very important people. When I did go on stage, I went the wrong way and walked out into the outside aisle, which didn't have a staircase, so I had to jump up a 4-foot ledge to get onto the stage and then come in from the wings, which no one actually knows happened. So I guess it was dark enough that we were able to pull it off. But you know, you get on stage and you make your acceptance speech short and sweet, and then you're kind of swept backstage into this green room photography area where someone hands you a glass of champagne, and the whole thing just kind of, you know, it lasts like 3 minutes, you know, and it's a very sort of whirlwind moment. And you're kind of like spit out the other side with a glass in one hand and a medal around your neck and, you know, the feeling of, oh my God, did that really just happen? We are not typically these type of people, but the hotel room was just trash. Like, there was stuff everywhere and my phone had died about halfway through the night. And so I had plugged it in, I rolled over, and there was 91 unread text messages and just crap everywhere in the room. And then you're just kind of left with, oh my God, yeah, that really did just happen.
James Beard Award-winning chefs and restaurateurs, Steven Strzajewski and Ryan Pruitt. Ryan Pruitt's experience at the James Beard Awards ceremonies stands in stark contrast to another chef who was up for the same Best Chef of the South Award in 2009.
Hey, this is John Currents. I'm the chef and owner of City Grocery, Bouret, Big Bad Breakfast, Snack Bar.
Sometimes it seems like all John Currents does is open new restaurants in his adopted town of Oxford, Mississippi. Over the years, they've earned him countless accolades, including nods from the James Beard Foundation. John received his first Beard nomination in 2005, vying for the honor of Best Chef of the Southeast, but lost to Joel Antonez in Atlanta. 2 years later, he was nominated for Best Chef of the South, losing to Donald Link. Then again in 2008, in the same category, this time losing to Miami chef Michelle Bernstein. So when John arrived at the James Beard Awards Gala in 2009, having nabbed a fourth nomination for Best Chef, he was more than a little anxious and trepidatious when it came to hoping again for a win.
Well, I mean, there was no reason for me to believe that I was going to win. I mean, I still to this day, you know, I tell folks every year, it's like 2009 was the worst recession year for awards that must have ever happened if I won that thing. Because when I look at the guys that I was nominated against, like the slate of talent was so fantastic. And I'd gotten to where I had just paralyzing butterflies in my stomach. And I didn't want to ever appear to be disappointed because I really was so flattered, you know, to just be included in that group of, you know, of incredibly talented chefs every year.
So how did John feel when finally the envelope was opened and he was announced the 2009 Best Chef of the South?
Well, I'm not going to lie to you. My wife got me hammered before that. And we went out to Danielle Ballou's place right before we went, and I had two double bourbons just so that, you know, I could just like not care when they didn't call my name, and we could sort of coast through this 11-hour long award ceremony. And so my wife and I remember we got in the auditorium and we were just giggling and giggling and giggling, and wasn't even following the program. I didn't know that our category had even come up because it was very early in the program that year. And we were giggling about something, and all of a sudden she goes, "Oh my God, that's you up on the screen." And I was seated between these two sort of like 400-pound guys, and we were all the way in the back. And but I mean, honestly, it was the most flattering moment professionally that, you know, that I can ever imagine. I mean, that moment. To know that that award, you know, is handed to you based on the votes of your peers and the incredibly talented group of people that have won awards in the past that are actually voting on the finalists is an incredibly wonderful moment. But, you know, I also knew and I think I said as much when I accepted it that, you know, it's a shame that they give that award to a chef because that chef doesn't exist without every person, you know, that has contributed to putting that food together and putting it on a table, serving it, managing it, washing the dishes. I mean, and, you know, even the rotten SOBs that you've had to fire participated in helping propel you to that point. And so it was a wonderful night, and it was a wonderful and exhausting night. I think I was in bed within an hour after it was over because I was just such an emotional wreck. I'm just glad somebody still remembers now. Like, that's the worst part of it, is like you begin this sort of cascading off into obscurity once you've won. And so now I'm just, you know, I'm one of the old guys in the room.
James Beard Award-winning chef, restaurateur, and author, John Kurtz. Okay, you James Beard fanatics, here's a puzzler for you. When was the first James Beard Award given out? Where was that ceremony held? And who won Best Chef for our region? Stay tuned, and we'll answer that question when we come right back. Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, and from French Market Coffee. French Market Coffee's premium blended beans are locally roasted in small batches, creating a coffee that can only be called New Orleans Bold. Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Culinary Institute. When was the first James Beard Award given out? Where was that ceremony held? And who won Best Chef for our region? James Beard, who is widely regarded as the father of American cuisine, died on January 21, 1985. According to the James Beard site, the first award ceremony took place on May 16th in 1991, when 1,000 people boarded the MS New Yorker. Yes, the ceremony was on a boat in New York City. George Plimpton emceed, and Emeril Lagasse was named Best Chef Southeast. All I can say is, hot bam! I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats.
This is Joe Ann Clevenger. I'm the owner and sort of general manager of the Upper Line Restaurant here in New Orleans. I opened in January 1983, and I'm really proud to still be around.
To the New Orleans community, Joanne Clevenger is much more than a successful restaurateur. She's a local fixture and living legend. In 2015, the Southern Foodways Alliance honored her with the Craig Claiborne Lifetime Achievement Award for her community stewardship and contributions to the hospitality industry. This year, she clinched her fifth nomination for Outstanding Restaurateur by the James Beard Foundation. But Joanne's remarkable career didn't begin in food. After decades of opening and operating businesses in the French Quarter, everything from folk music bars to vintage clothing stores, she got a tip that would lead her to establish the Upper Line Restaurant in 1983. So there you are in your vintage clothing store, happy as a clam.
Yeah, I was actually.
And a building uptown comes up for sale. What possessed you to change course again?
I was looking for a way to open a second store near the universities, and I was driving past Kirsch's Jeans Barbecue Restaurant on my way back to the Quarter, and it said for a lease. So I called when I got back to the Quarter, and the lady said, oh, it's no longer for lease. Today, the owners decided to sell the building. And all the years I've been this serial entrepreneur, I never could afford a building. And the first thought when she said it was for sale was, how much? So I said, how much?
That's great bargaining power.
And it was just the little tiny first room you come in. It was $112,000. And the first thought that went through my brain was, I think I could do that.
Oh, gosh.
And I got so excited, I couldn't remember the word option. So I had this long, convoluted question about, whereby if I gave you a certain amount of money, would you promise not to sell it to anybody?
Oh.
So I persuaded my husband, that's my second husband, Alan Greenacre, to take a second mortgage on our house. He's an engineer. I persuaded my son, Jason Clevenger, to quit his job as a head chef at Cafe Sabiza's. We bought the building. We did the work. We cleaned it all out. And we opened January 83 with 40 chairs and no money for the first week's payroll. And, of course, there were very few uptown restaurants then. And so we got a nice honeymoon, and it was exciting. My son was very well organized. He got us in Gourmet Magazine. But you know how we got in Gourmet Magazine?
How?
Ella Brennan brought Ellen Brown to lunch, and Ellen Brown was doing a story about New Orleans restaurants, and she included Commanders and us, and I think the other one might have been Bayona. So, I mean, I owe so much to Ellen, not just for that particular instance, but the inspiration that she and other restaurateurs and chefs, women, have started a path that the rest of us can follow without as many obstacles as they had. When we first opened, we had a charcoal grill. There were very few restaurants. Jason had put in a charcoal grill at Sabiza's before he left, and we had one, so we did grilled fish, which was very new on charcoal in New Orleans at that time. When I looked at a menu today from when we first opened, and some of the dishes we still have on the menu are there. They've evolved. We had a shrimp remoulade then. We have a shrimp remoulade now. But we put it on top of the fried green tomatoes. We had roast duck on our menu, and it's evolved. I've had 6 main chefs, and each of them is reflected on today's menu. And I'm really proud of that, that it's a collaborative effort. It's not one person that's driven this engine. It's a collaboration. The front of the house, the back of the house, all 6 of these chefs, of course, the guests and their feedback and the media and the vendors, but it's not a single entity, not a single person that does it. It's a collaborative effort. I'm really good at coming up with ideas. I have a really good ability to taste things. And I also have the experience to know what sometimes what the guests will enjoy and whether it's practical to produce in the kitchen. Because no matter how many great dishes you think of, you've got to be able to produce it in the kitchen without disrupting the line. And the signature dishes now, well, I think the fried green tomatoes is the one that's the most famous because so many people have copied it. Now it's made millions of people happy. But after Katrina, there's 2 dishes that are on the menu that have proved to be extraordinarily popular. And the Oyster St. Claude was actually inspired by Mandich's not reopening. And I wanted to have an oyster dish that would in some way pay tribute to them. So Chef Ken Smith and I got that dish together. And so then the next dish was, I didn't want to go to France or England after Katrina, so my husband, Alan Greenacre, and my son, Jason Clevenger, we drove to Birmingham. And one of the restaurants we went to was the Hot and Hot Fish Club, Chris Hastings, who got a James Beard Award recently. And I was so intrigued by the name Hot and Hot Fish Club. I said, I'm going to invent a dish we can call Hot and Hot, because he didn't have one on the menu.
Uh-huh.
So I did. And again, Chef Ken and I worked on that dish for weeks. And basically, it's 2 sauces. When we peel the shrimp, we save the shells, make a stock, reduce it to 2 sauces, in one of which we put jalapenos, the other we put habaneros. The habanero one's in a little silver container, so you have complete control. And both of them have been amazingly popular. I sincerely believe that if you put a parameter around, that it helps your brain to stretch. And that's the way it was with the Oyster St. Claude, the Hot and Hot Shrimp. And it really was the way it was with the fried green tomatoes, too. Because when I heard they were going to make a movie about fried green tomatoes, I said, oh, my gosh, we got to have a dish.
You really are the restaurant, Joanne. When people go to the upper line, if you were to not be there, I think they might just about fall down.
Well, I'm pretty consistent. I am. I think that's, again, that North Louisiana work ethic. But part of it also is being a waitress and learning to come out of myself, because before that I was a bookworm. And if you're a waiter or waitress, you have to become gregarious. You have to look at the guest as someone you want to enhance their experience. And when I finally found out about 25 years ago, the original meaning of the word restaurant, restorative, I was so relieved because it made sense, the whole thing. Again, it's a benevolent circle. We restore the guest, whether it's a diner or a hot dog stand or haute cuisine. If you do it right, your guests come in after the hassles of the day and you nourish them in spirit and body, and they go away stronger, braver, and enhanced. And that's a restorative. Because I guess, Poppy, in some ways, I want the world to be a better place. And I'm not a school teacher, and I'm not a registered nurse or doctor. But in my own little way, I can help people to feel better about their lives for a little while and feel nurtured and celebratory. Because restaurants celebrate life. They celebrate the occasion. They make occasions more memorable because of the hospitality and because of the shared experience. Sometimes I talk about restaurants are about strangers breaking bread together. And I think it makes us more tolerant of each other. And I think in the long run, it makes us more appreciative of our lives. And sometimes we forget that our lives are not a dress rehearsal. So I really think we should grab the day, live for today, and be of some good in the world.
With your over 30 years in the business now, Joanne, what do you hope that your legacy in this industry will be?
That the people that work with us over the years go on to have it make a difference in their lives. Because that's the other part of having a restaurant. You hire people, and sometimes you can nurture them into a place where they want to go. They didn't even realize they wanted to go. Our bartender has been with us over 20 years. African-American, he started as a dishwasher when he was a junior in high school. He was the most shy person I had ever met. And he has thrived and flourished, and he's an amazing bartender. And when we go out of town for holidays, he's the one who has to come. And if the burglar alarm goes off, he's the one who comes over. You know, I mean, we've been a niche for people. We had Ken Smith work for us for 20 years, 10 years learning to be a chef, 10 years as our chef. He left us 6 years ago to learn to be a Roman Catholic priest. At the age of 50, he left us. So it was a collaborative effort. We nurtured him, he nurtured us, but it was a niche for him before he went out into this other adventure in life. And so I think the legacy I want to think about is what have we done for the people that work with us? And maybe also what have we done for the people who are our guests and our customers? Because I know that we have a place in their hearts and for some of them, because they'll come back and they haven't been in 20 years. And they say, oh, I'm so glad to see you. I was hoping so much you would be here. And so we have a place in other people's spirits and hearts. And that's good to know.
But Joanne, I'm so grateful that you took this time to sit down with us. And thank you so much for being our guest on Louisiana Eats and sharing your amazing story with us.
I'm a lucky person. I'm such a lucky person. Thank you, Poppy. It was a lovely thing to be with you.
Joanne Clevenger of the Upper Line Restaurant. Good luck, Joanne.
Hope you bring home the beard this year.
Happiness, more or less, it's just a change in me, something in my liberty. On my mind.
That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Have you missed an episode of Louisiana Eats? Hear today's show or catch up on previous editions anytime online at itsneworleans.com. If you're not podcasting yet, it's time to subscribe. We've launched an exclusive podcast series, Louisiana Eats Quick Bites, made up of sneak previews of material that hasn't hit the airwaves yet and full-length interviews never heard on the show before. Visit our podcast page at poppytooker.com so you won't miss a single serving of our broadcast or our podcast. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, French Market Coffee, Camellia Beans, and Rouse's Markets. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by the Shreveport-Bossier Convention and Tourist Bureau, and with support from Dickie Brennan's Steakhouse, a local New Orleans steakhouse serving prime beef and Louisiana Wagyu in New Orleans' French Quarter, where on May 8th, you can learn the art of butchering from internationally renowned Italian butcher, Dario Caccini. For more information, go to DickieBrennanSteakhouse.com. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to producers Joe Schreiner, Sarah Holtz, and Reggie Morris. And to our business manager and social media maven, Maddie Mulladew. Come visit us anytime in our Louisiana Eats studios at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Don't forget to find our recipes and see what we're up to at poppytooker.com. You can check us out on Instagram and Facebook, too.
Louisiana Eats is a production of Poppy Tooker Broadcasting.